This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting Wednesday, December 20th, 2006.
So record. That's that. Face it this way. All right. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if there are any late additions to the agenda. Michael, yeah.
I was at the meeting for the Ezra birthday.
Right, yesterday.
And they want to know if the EA is going to be doing something for the 11th, which is the week after the week you get back, or something's going to happen. I should be discussing today's meeting.
Okay. Anything else? All right.
We're talking about the supervisor form today and agenda.
They're not on here, but we can put it under. Well, Hazel's not here. Is anybody else prepared to report on TomTom?
I don't know.
I want as much report as Ben, but it's okay.
We'll save that till the end.
And we have in there just we can do it under committee reports the one appointment to the CJC.
Okay, yeah, thanks for reminding.
And I just remove one person because of conflict of interest, so but we'll have someone that will step up.
Okay. All right. Did everyone meet Steve Golding?
Hi Steve.
Hi.
Thanks for being here today.
Mm-hmm.
And did everyone get the email that I sent out with attachments, right? This nifty looking thing. And an economic impact statement. Did y'all have a chance to look it over?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Who wrote it?
Who wrote it?
Which one? The economic impact statement?
Yeah.
Well, I wrote the executive summary, but it was done from a compilation of about 104 pages of materials that were collected from all across the university, provided by all the colleges and departments. So,
So given that and kind of starting that line of discussion, I was hoping that we could take the rest of this agenda, kind of items 3 through 7, and push them to the end so that we had time to talk with Steve, because he'll be here till 1. And I know Mary will be here soon. Is everybody in agreement with that? And then we can do our business at the end of the meeting.
Make a motion to suspend the agenda.
Second. All right. Everyone in favor? All right. So, Pat, you want to continue with that?
Cool.
Well, instead of taking a drink, do you want to? So, shall we talk about the economic impact statement?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It, I guess the thing, coming from a land grant.
Right. Oh, see, Pat is our representative from Geneva. I think the two of you. Okay.
Yes. So from my perspective, coming from the land grant university or college, I'm amazed to see the impact that the research and the extension actually has on not just New York State, but the whole United States. And the amount, the money, the, you know, the number of jobs that are generated. I think this is an amazing summary of what Cornell really is. And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled about the whole thing.
I'm very excited. I am. I'm very excited.
Well, maybe just to put it all in context, that will help you so that understand what we're going to do with it. About a year ago, I approached Hunter and suggested that the university do an economic impact analysis, which he thought was a worthy endeavor to undertake. The reason why institutions do this, I think, is in some measure not so much to sort of blow their own horn about what great things they do, but actually more to allow for the universities to be somewhat introspective about what it is that they do and what it is that they may do better. And so, while in one sense, yes, we will take this document and we will go to Albany and we will lay it before the legislature and we will say, you know, let us tell you what Cornell's positive impact is to the state of New York. And as you can see from just the executive summary, we have a tremendously positive impact on the state. The fact of the matter is that there's also information on the flip side, which is that this economic analysis says we spend out of our $2.5 billion that we spend annually, we spend about half of it, 50 cents on the dollar, in the state of New York. And 50 cents on the dollar goes outside the state of New York. And so one is sort of left with the question, you know, should it be 75%, 75 cents on the dollar in the state of New York? And if so, what will we have to do to generate another 25 cents of spending per dollar in the state of New York? And that's not saying it's right or wrong whether or not we spend that money in state or out of state. It's asking the question, is there something that we could do in order to further maximize or further leverage what we're doing as an institution? Example, 50 cents of every dollar that we spend in terms of goods and services purchased is out of state, which means that there's about $450 million of spending that we're doing on goods and services that's going outside of the state. Well, if we could take, you know, a third of that and spend it in state, what's the economic multiplier? What's the benefit? And so it's those kinds of questions that this report will begin to allow us to look at and to ask. Extension is another wonderful example. I mean, we've got this broken down on a county-by-county basis, so the county offices will be able to go to their own respective legislators and say, you know, here's our impact within our own individual county, but put it in the context of the entire state, and hopefully that will allow for a more effective opportunity to communicate with the county governing bodies as to, you know, ways that the counties can be more supportive of extension within the communities in which they serve. And then there's this sort of the sidebars, which is that the way this information was put together, it was even news to people within Cornell how much money was being leveraged in effect for the cooperative extension program, because they never counted those dollars. But the fact of the matter is if the platform wasn't there, those dollars would not be generated for the programs that they're supporting. And so, you know, you can't simply ignore them. You sort of have to add them all up and look at them holistically. And so the exercise has actually been very valuable for all of the various offices that have participated in this, because it's really allowed them to look at information and data in an entirely different way and to think about what that data is telling them, not only from the standpoint of what they already know that they're doing, but potentially for things that they may do differently or may do better.
With regards to goods and services mm-hmm. that are purchased outside of New York State, mm-hmm. is there a way to get a more definitive breakdown? I mean,
well, we know where every dollar goes. Our purchasing department can tell you. I mean, and in the report, we show the top 10 goods purchased at both Ithaca and the Weill Medical College, so that we know. We can tell you the goods purchased. We can tell you the provider that provides it. We can break it all the way down. So okay. there's I mean, the report itself is not intended to be granular to the extent that it goes down that deep. But if the report is used, hopefully the way it can be used, it can cause you to do the kind of in-depth analysis that would allow you to sit there and say, you know, if I identified three or four goods and services that were being purchased out of state, is there an in-state supplier that I could purchase that from?
Mm-hmm.
There's another way of looking at it, which is if Cornell has to go out of state, does that mean Syracuse has to go out of state? Does that mean Rochester has to go out of state? Does that mean Colgate has to go out of state? Does that mean RIT has to go out of state?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean RPI has to go out of state? Does that mean the SUNY research institutions have to go out of state? Well, you know, hypothetically, you know, that could be billions of dollars, not hundreds of millions of dollars of goods and services that, you know, if you targeted three or four or five industries, and you could say, you know, I can channel this revenue stream, a portion of this revenue stream, if you put bricks and mortars in the state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the potential. I mean, it allows you to at least begin to think about it in those kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me is the real value of this exercise. I mean, the other part of it, which is actually kind of interesting, is when we started it, nobody thought we were really going to be able to do it. I mean, it was sort of like, Cornell is too complex. There's absolutely no way you can collect this data.
Yeah.
Right, Mary?
That's right. It's too complex.
and actually, the data, the original data collection was not that difficult. I mean, the more interesting part was the people who began to argue about the data. Well, you know, I've never seen that data in that way, or I don't know that I agree with the data that you're presenting and so forth. So it has brought the beginnings, I think, of a sort of a common conversation that will further help in the strategic thinking from an institutional wide perspective. I think this is first generation. When the report's finally published, will be first generation. If you were to go, I participated in the first one at the University of Pennsylvania. If you were to look at the first report that we published in the early 90s versus the report that they just published last year, the level of sophistication, it gets more sophisticated each time because you begin to think about different questions you want to ask and you begin to think about different ways to present your data. It's an evolving exercise, but it has real value for the institution.
Steve, how did the New York State Assembly evaluate Cornell's impact prior to even having something like this? I mean, I know they probably haven't even seen this as a report yet, but
no, they'll see it next winter. But I mean, most of that's ad hoc and by word of mouth, in the sense of, you know, we think we know what, you know, Cornell does, or we have the specifics, you know, the legislator who had their dog taken care of at the vet school, or the friend who said, you know, without the Cornell vet school, the racing industry wouldn't be viable in the state of New York and stuff. So you have those types of experiences, but there's never been anything this comprehensive put together. Though I will say that there have been previous reports about the land grant colleges that have been published and so forth, but this itself is even more comprehensive than the reports on the land grant colleges that have been done, and so it will be sort of for the first time really a sort of a composite view. And what's interesting about it, here's the other part that we wrestle with a lot. At the senior staff level, but I think is really sort of integral to where David Skorton is going, is that, you know, when we think about Cornell, we think about the land grant mission, we think about four colleges,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's sort of that natural, well, it's not four colleges. I mean, Cornell is the land grant institution. It's not the four colleges. The four colleges mm-hmm. happen to have been created by the state, but the institution as a whole is the land-grant university, which means that even the endowed colleges are really part of the land-grant mission And so, you know, this begins to provide another avenue for beginning to talk about all the other things that all the other schools, colleges do for and benefit to the state of New York in a fundamental set of ways. So it's moving. Completely obscure what the four colleges do, because that's very important for getting funding and for doing the things that need to be done in terms of keeping our relationship with the state. On the other hand, what you also want to do is show the state that really they're getting much more for their dollar than mm-hmm. just simply the four four contract colleges.
On page 5, you've got a nice pie chart that shows that there's 56,000 degree holders
yeah.
by address in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
did anyone even attempt or think about late at night about what the financial effect that is to the state in terms of dollars and salaries?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just at the first level.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's tertiary to, you know, Cornell directly, but it's a big number.
Well, at the point of sounding elitist, there are actually studies that have done about the value of Ivy League education versus. I mean, you could do the computation that way and come up with sort of a gross number. I think the way these studies actually do is they actually try to bifurcate them by skill sets: how many doctors, how many vets, how many teachers, how many lawyers, how many whatever, because, I mean, from the standpoint of diversification and strength to the economy, in this case, it's not so much the dollars that they earn, but it's the intellectual capacity that they bring to the state that what you're trying to capture in terms of the flow through the benefit of a Cornell education. So, you know, what you really want to do is we want to look at that 56,000, you want to sit there and say, okay, there are 56,000 alumni living in the state. First message to every politician is, geez, there are 56,000 Cornellians who can vote. Okay. And that's the subtle message. The more direct message is there are 56,000 Cornellians, and they are actively contributing to the vitality of the state, and here's a list of the top 10 professions that they're in. You know, whether that be, financiers in terms of Wall Street, whether it be, you know, vets, whether it be whatever. But that's the way that you try to package that part of the message.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to that degree of depth in this report. I think in a future report, we would really actually want to talk about that in a fundamental way.
You may be aware that Division of Alumni Affairs and Development just did a fairly comprehensive survey of our alumni database, and the rate of return was astounding. I mean, most of your direct mailers would love to have a return rate that we had on that, and a lot of financial data was provided in those, so it'd be a great place to get at some of that.
I think the next time, Drew, we'll be more sophisticated. But this was a good start,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of capturing that kind of thing.
I kind of had a question about that, just because I noticed 60% of the undergraduates were from New York State, and I know being a recent graduate, most of the trend is kind of to move back close to home, or even nowadays it seems like most students move back in with their families. Were each of these
I hope not.
I know, we hope not, but
are these
individuals that actually have jobs that moved back, or are they individuals that are just in your state keeping in contact with their address?
Well, that's the address that they have. We actually have somewhere in here in the full report, we actually have a chart which shows that actually there's a higher level of graduates who are staying in New York now. Now, is that because we've actually seen an uptick in graduate students who are coming from New York already to get their degree and then just going back to their job or whatever? We haven't been able to break down that sort of data to that degree, but there is clearly an uptick in terms of Cornell graduates staying in the state of New York after graduation. There is also an uptick in the number of New York State residents coming to Cornell for a degree. Some of that may be driven by the fact that we've increased the growth in our graduate programs has been higher in our undergraduate programs, and the likelihood of getting an in-state student to Cornell as a graduate seems to be, there may be some correlation there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the trend is definitely up in terms of staying within the state of New York.
Yeah. Anybody did notice anything about retirees in this particular? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering Cornell, I don't even know how many retirees Cornell, active retirees Cornell has, but I would guess that would also be another area that Cornell is contributing to the community. Mary, maybe you have some figures on that?
We have several thousand active retirees. You mean alive?
Yes.
Active and alive.
Several thousand. Okay. So also are contributing to the community and would probably would generate additional taxes.
Those are
were they figuring in on this at all?
Those are hard to. I mean, through the way the data is collected, those are hard to pick up. Because actually, the economic impact study. I mean, we can do it qualitatively, okay? You know, which is not as precise as the quantitative part. But the numbers piece of it, we're tying directly back to our financial statements. So, and this is actually just simply self-protection, right? Which is if somebody comes and says, where did you get that number? Well, we're able to go back and say, it came out of our audited financial statement. It's right here, and this is how the number was derived. And so for a retiree, given the fact that they're probably on a defined contribution plan compared to the defined benefit plan, they're already off of our books in terms of our ability to capture that. So we'd have to have some other mechanism for capturing what Cornell retirees are doing in the community in that respect.
Another question I had, and Mary, maybe you would be interested in answering this as well. I can't say for sure just where I saw it, but I thought I read that somewhere between 2000 and 2005, Cornell's workforce increased by 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of at odds of what I thought workforce planning was hoping to do in terms of tapping the numbers, or at least slowing down the numbers in new hires.
Well, the university ebbs and flows in terms of its growth, and so there's a large percentage of that growth that comes with soft money. So we get a new big research project, and we'll grow in that area. We've had a steady chronic growth in certain fields, and that's been unabated, technology being the largest.
Okay, so some of the other fields would be besides technology?
And then in the general area of compliance, we've had people being brought on over the years to manage compliance. But actually technology and recently communication are our two areas that have been growing.
But I mean, if you look at it, you look at Robin Yeager, I mean Robin Davidson, excuse me, and she brought 12. She brought 12 employees with her. So
researcher.
Yeah, researcher.
All
so
funded by her.
So when you think about it, I mean, it's that kind of the growth in the research enterprise and the number of research faculty who have been brought on over that period, which are probably the leading cause for that growth in employees.
And the same actually is true for the a large percentage of the technology growth is also in support of research.
So research and communications
to be. Well, technology as a job family, okay. Communications as a job place, and the actual numbers in communication are very, very small, whereas the numbers in information technology are much larger. But even in the technology job family, which is a job family that's growing, a large percentage of that growth has occurred because of new grant funding.
Stephen, that was a very informative report, but what I found difficult was to, in my mind, compare it to other entities. I mean, other research enterprises, other land grants, universities, the state schools in the state of New York. So it was hard to say how well we were doing in a lot of things.
Michael, I would answer you by saying Cornell is actually being very selfish in this report. It is actually trying to make itself look better than anybody and everybody in that regard. But while I say that, you will find as you go through the report that we will provide comparisons. For example, you'll get into the area of research. There will be a whole analysis about how we compare to the other research institutions in the state of New York. So the observation in there is that, you know, Cornell is the number one research university in terms of total funding in the state, which it is. We'll also then show you various other methods of comparative analysis, which will show that we're not number one in other categories. But we do make the position. We do actually make the the lead that says Cornell is, I mean, New York State is the number two state in total in research spending in the country, only behind California. And Cornell, as the number one generator of research funding in the state, is a significant contributor to New York's position in that regard. And then we say, okay, here are all these other comparisons that you can look at. We do the same with technology transfer, and we show what Cornell's record is, but then we'll provide comparative analysis with other state institutions. It's actually, you know, it's the other way of looking at this, and another way of thinking about your question is to say, what this shows is that Cornell is a significant economic engine. The other thought one might have is, suppose it didn't say Cornell, but just simply said New York State higher education. And then the economic impact on the state of New York. And what would higher education as an industry be on the state of New York? And thinking about that within the context of talking with legislators, talking with governors, talking with the business community and so forth. I mean, the fact of the matter is, as an enterprise, I would suggest that we may not be as big as the financial services industry in the state of New York, but you know, we would probably be in the top five in terms of economic generator for the state when you think of the 64 state institutions plus the number of private institutions that are in the state in terms of bringing money into the state and then promoting economic activity around that. So in one sense, yeah, this is designed to really sort of push Cornell, but the fact of the matter is we could do this collaboratively and collegially with our peers and actually have a very powerful document from a political perspective.
So is that like the next step for this report?
I think that Ron Sieber and others will probably have discussions with their peers. Some states are doing this right now. Ohio is doing it right now. A couple of other Midwestern states have done it. Michigan's done it. So, I mean, there are people that are looking at it, and Ron and others will probably talk with their counterparts in SUNY to see if there's an interest. SUNY has done stuff like this, but not in the breadth of what they've got, of what we presented here.
Right?
Columbia's done one too, yeah. Not recently, but I mean, they've done one.
But David has spoken in front of several councils about the importance of universities being addressing the public good.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes a long way, as Steve was saying, in identifying the value of universities past the very simplistic formulaic notion that we hear in the rhetoric about how much it costs to get a degree, and really looking at the value of universities in a broader way.
Mm-hmm.
And SUNY did their report, did they include the four colleges here?
No. They were doing just this
thing. I know that Cornell definitely wants to toot its own horn in this report. How significant a role do you feel that collaboration with other universities by our researchers here would play?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Rutgers, UC Davis. I mean, we have many researchers that do collaborate with other universities. How would that play into this? I mean, we are certainly bringing funding back to New York State from other universities and those grants that are funding it.
And we capture that.
Okay.
And we capture that. I mean, that all flows through the balance sheet, and we pick that up, and we capture the spending that goes through there. And anecdotally, there may be stories about that kind of collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when you see the full report, remember, I mean, there are two pieces to the report. There is just the hard numbers, right? And I would be admonished if I didn't say this. Economic impact modeling is not a science; it is an art. Okay.
Sure.
So that the numbers that you're looking at are approximations. They're pretty good approximations, and the model that we use, the implant model, is better than most because it is built. The economic modeling is actually built off of New York State, in this case, specific statistics, so that we're not using averages from the federal government, which other models use. We're actually using numbers, indicators, multipliers that are actually derived from specific information generated about New York State. But even with that step, the fineness to granularity with which you can get down to, you know, whether it's 500 or 527 jobs that have been generated, you, the model is just not fine enough in order to do that. So what we're really doing is we're providing an approximation, but it's a pretty good approximation, and it's one that has been accepted over time. And that's just sort of the hard numbers. Right? You know, Cornell spent this amount of money directly in the economy. The direct impact created this kind of economic activity, and then the indirect impact out of that economic impact, you know, created this sort of holistic number that we provide within in this report. But then there is the qualitative side of this. I mean, it's sort of like telling a story, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so you can do the cooperative extension, right? And you can tell the wonderful story, right? That cooperative extension allowed 40,000 New Yorkers to volunteer their time, free of charge, right? But if you assume $15 an hour, that would be $25 million of free services provided by New Yorkers, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and that those 40,000 people touched 535,000 farmers, wine growers, individuals, families, small businesses, not-for-profit agencies, and service providers within the community. I mean, so that's the qualitative side of it. And then here are the 10 programs that fall under the umbrella of cooperative extension. And here are just a myriad of examples of all the ways those services were ultimately delivered. So you take some numbers and you use them, but really what you're really trying to do is you're really trying to get to the story. You know, how do I provide that? I mean, it's the little stuff. I mean, another one that really catches me is nobody really understands about the technology park by the airport, which was started in 1981, right? 700,000 square feet. You know, if I told somebody there were 700,000 square feet in the technology, most of people wouldn't believe me that there's 700,000 square feet. You know, I forget what the number is now off the top of my head, but like there's 90 companies there. There's 1,800 people who are employed there out of something that was started basically on a shoestring in 1980, which is now generating and providing opportunities for 1,800 people to work, which, you know, we're using for incubator space for our technology commercialization programs and so forth. So, I mean, it's those kinds of stories that have the impact of explaining the various ways that Cornell is affecting change and so forth. So, not just the 25, 28 companies that we started. It's all these other little things that Cornell does that really. I mean, you think about Geneva. I mean, just it's amazing what Geneva does for the food service industry in the state. And there's a great, it's not in the executive summary, but there's a great piece on Geneva in the full report, which talks about all of the various ways Geneva touches across the state.
What's the life of such a report before it's obsolete?
About 24 hours.
The next one.
We won't start right away. We'll milk this one to death. But in reality, you know, it's only as good as the last financial statement that you use to generate it off of. So when we had a wonderful debate. If you go into the full report and you get to the section on research, where is it? I've got it here somewhere. It's sort of funny. The research is we're spending what $563 million or something on research in this report, and Bob Richardson came up to the last meeting we had of the full committee. He said that number's no good. What do you mean it's no good? He said, no, 563 is no good. It's really $603 million that we got. Bob, that was last year's number. Well, Bob, this report isn't last year. It's, we're a year earlier, but it's that kind of stuff that changes so quickly, and that drives. When you think about it, that $40 million has significant implications in terms of all the multipliers through the whole thing. So Bob will want to be out there, you know, catching that next wave in order to show what that is. And that's really sort of been the other part of it that's been fun for me, which is the enthusiasm which people have gotten into in terms of putting this together, which is, you know, it was a lot of hard work. People worked really, really hard. But at the end of the day, I think that the enthusiasm which they had in terms of the finished product is just really, really beneficial.
Michael,
are you going to tease out a more specific Tompkins County or City of Ithaca from the report and share it with the local community? And if so, or if not, do you think that the impact of this is going to affect Cornell's voluntary contribution to the community?
Let me take the last question first, which is no. This will have no impact on the Cornell's contribution to the community. What was it? 10 days ago, David Scorton did a speech before the downtown partnership, Judy had written this very nice speech, which David immediately proceeded to trash by just leaving it at the table and doing his own sort of off-the-cuff speech. And in it, one of the points that he made was that we were doing this study, and that one of the values of the study is you could actually do the compare and contrast about, you know, how much Cornell is taking away from the community. Right, so we have roughly $65 million worth of tax savings because we're not for profit on a real estate tax. But what's the quid pro quo? Well, the quid pro quo is on the back of the envelope. I can tell you, in Tompkins County, Cornell generates about $1.1 billion of economic activity just in the surrounding Tompkins County. So. Yeah, we're taking $65 million off the table, but there's $1.1 billion flowing into the economy in a variety of different ways. They would say, yeah, that's a pretty good trade, from an investment standpoint, but that's not the only story, and that's why we have to be very careful about these conversations, because the fact of the matter is, what you really want to know more about the city of Ithaca is only one-third of the city of Ithaca property land base is taxable. Okay, two-thirds are exempt. Then you'd also want to know that 16 of the top 20 employers in Ithaca are not for profits. So now let's think, 10 years down the way. And let's think about the implications that has on the viability of the city of Ithaca in terms of being able to sustain its programs and its services if it's got a tax base which is only a third, and it's got a profile for its employer which is basically not for profit. And unfortunately, we're probably the largest one, and we may be the largest even when you look at the for profit. In terms of the amount of economic activity that we generate, and Ithaca wouldn't be too far behind in that respect. So, from David's perspective, David will be actually be asking, what's the strategic things we need to think about from the standpoint of the viability of Ithaca and Tompkins County in order to protect Cornell's future, okay? And then think of the reverse of that, which is, what does Ithaca need to be thinking about in order to make sure that Cornell remains viable? Because, quite frankly, the relationship is a two-way street, and it's very important for both sides to understand that. So, the economic impact study will say, Cornell's not a bad deal in a whole variety of ways for Ithaca and Tompkins County. But by itself, that doesn't answer the question. That only begins to scratch the surface in terms of how you've got to think strategically about the issues that are surrounding it and the importance those issues have in terms of the next 10, 15, 20 years program.
Andre, I know.
This is just really quick, basically. It's a 30,000-foot wrap-up question. And I know that, you know, there's a whole qualitative aspect to it, you know, having spent years in writing economic impact statements for private corporations. But Cornell, $1.6 billion, what's the bigger number for higher education in New York State? It's the educated guess, just to sort of get a perspective.
What would be a bigger number than Cornell's impact?
No, what would be the higher education?
You look at it this way. We basically doubled, right? So our 1.3, 1.4 in-state generated about $3 billion. If you said that higher education in general was spending, I mean, hypothetically, who knows what it is, $7, $8 billion, more than that, actually, probably. It's probably close to $25 billion by the time you put it all together. And let's say they're doing the same at Cornell. They're 50%, which I would doubt because the community colleges probably spend more money in-state and so forth. So let's say we'll even do that, say $15 billion. They're generating $30 billion worth of economic activity if you assume the multipliers are pretty similar. The multipliers are all dependent upon what you're buying and selling and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's not all the same. But I mean, it would be a big number. Mm. It would be a big number.
Steve, I know you need to leave at one. So does anybody else have questions for?
I have one quick question.
Sure.
Steve, under Cornell as an enterprise, there's a bullet that talks about Cornell as directly or indirectly accounted for a total of more than 23,000 jobs in central New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that here, active people in, we got, what, about 12 or 13,000 employees here at the university?
Right.
So where did the other 10,000 come from? Are those student workers? Are those graduate students on stipend?
Those are, if you... Where is it? Actually, the total impact for Central New York was 20,599 jobs. 12,464 were direct payroll jobs. Those are people who were paid salaries.
About
12,464. Thank you.
that's
everybody. That's everybody who we employ. Okay. We generated another direct set of jobs of about 2,300 through our purchase of goods and services. That the model suggests that by the buying of goods and services, and that's also construction. So you know the 800 construction workers we have on campus or whatever that number is would be in that 23. Okay, so that's direct. And then we have indirect or induced, which means that either because we provided a contractor with money that they could then go out and do something that generated jobs. And so there, what they're saying is the impact of employee spending generated 4,325 jobs, approximately, and the impact of vendor and contract spending, that's where we set our money, 1,495 jobs. So it's the combination of the 12, the 2, the 4, and the 1, which comes to 20,599 jobs, roughly, you know, 25,000 jobs in total, either direct or indirect.
Okay, so it's sort of a ripple effect.
It's a ripple effect all the way through. So you're looking at it in three ways. That which we directly employ, that which we cause somebody to employ because we purchased a goods or a service, and then when they spend their money, that which they induce through their actions, which generate additional jobs through the economy.
That's second last question, when will this go live? When will people be able to...
There's one last read that needs to take place. We never did get to the master plan. There's one more read that needs to take place, and then we do, actually, I didn't answer the other half of Michael's question. We are doing a presentation to all of the local municipal leaders on the 15th of January here. We actually met with them when we kicked this thing off and told them what we were doing and what we would be doing and how it would come about and so forth. We present it to the Trustees Government Affairs Committee on the 24th or 25th of the month. And about that time, there will be a series of letters that will be crafted, one to the governor, 500 or whatever it is to assemblymen and senators and all the other people, whatever, and then it will go live on the web. I would imagine at some point there might be, I would not be looking forward to it, but I imagine at some point there would be some kind of a presentation on campus for anybody who wanted to come and take pot shots at it.
Mm-hmm. So you do have time for one last question.
Sure.
Just real quick. I mean, all this is great news, but is there anything on the horizon that you're aware of that any of this will turn in the opposite direction?
From the underlying vitality of the institution?
Yeah.
I mean, there are always issues that you worry about. Will the federal government continue to support the research enterprise at the level that it has? Will we be able to recruit the next generation of faculty to sustain the research enterprise as we have it? At what point do we max out our ability to charge the tuition rates that we do that could have an impact? I mean, So all of those things are always things that you worry about. But I think, the good news, I mean, if you look at it that way, the good news is that the economic impact study would suggest, and this is probably a good way to end this conversation. If I go back very, very quickly, do I have time to do this? If I go back, one of the things that we did was the question was, do we do the economic impact study in-house and use our faculty to do the study, or do we go outside? And we went and talked to one of the leading people on the faculty about this, a lady by the name of Susan Christofferson. After talking with her, the conclusion was, like everything at Cornell, we'll do it both ways. and so we actually retained Susan and her little group to be advisors, because they actually run the implant model in-house. So they were sort of like a little the three-person advisor group to Joanne DiStefano, who really basically did all of this work. So if you see Joanne DiStefano, you should all congratulate her on the job that she did, because it's absolutely super. But they advised Joanne and I throughout the process about things we need to think about and traps that were built into the model and that kind of stuff. But what we also did was, at their suggestions, we went out and we hired a consultant who had done this for higher education, because really what you want is somebody to drive the process. If you don't have somebody driving the process, it'll take you 3 years to do this than having somebody who basically said, I can do it for you in 12, and it actually took 18, but that's all right. We got it done in 18 weeks. And we picked Appleseed. The reason why we picked Appleseed is because they're a New York-based firm, and to have credibility in New York, you had to have a New York-based firm to do that. Well, Appleseed's done Harvard. They've done Brown. They've done they did Columbia at one time. They've done all the major universities in the country at one time or another. So they know basically our peer group. Their comment after about 10 weeks into this is that there was no institution that they dealt with that touched their state in more ways positive than Cornell University. So here is an independent assessment by a firm that has been doing this for years, and they have never seen any institution that has the breadth in terms of its impact on its fate as Cornell. And if you think about it, some people sort of yawn and say, oh, that doesn't surprise me, but for most people, they don't really think about it. So when somebody says it, you really have to sort of step back and think, you know, there's, you know, 535,000 New Yorkers who were impacted positively by cooperative extension, which no other Ivy peer has, right? Okay. As compared to the fact that we spend $563 million in research, which makes us in the top 10 in terms of the research enterprise, to the whole issue of Geneva and how it looks at the food services industry versus CALS and what it does. So the synergies of everything that we have are really basically, in some measure, totally unique, which is a good news. It's also a little bit complex to manage, but it's a good news story when you put something like this together, because what it basically does is it allows you to have a pretty rich set of data sources to talk about all of the great things that you do, and to have somebody like the consultants from Appleseed, you know, confirm that is really something that we're actually going to have them do when they make the presentation to the Board of Trustees, is that's going to be their opening line. I'll come back and do the campus map.
Can we get a research overall?
Yeah, so I forget the exact number, but we were in the top
10 overall. Everybody.
Well, Steve, thank you so much of the employees assembly.
Yeah.
So much of our businesses here on campus that gives us the chance to think a little more
rather
than
just
Cornell
campus. Thank you. Anyway, right?
Thanks, Mary.
When I open my web explorer, there's your face.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
About 3. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you, Donna, for inviting him. That was very informative.
Well, like I said, you know, so much of our attention is focused here on campus all the time and what staff do here at Cornell. I don't know. I thought it was a nice opportunity to think about what happened.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And I'll try to get a full copy of the report. I'm not sure that I count until after the trustees see it in January, but I'll get it. So can we do the business part and approve minutes? There are no minutes.
I sent you a message yesterday.
All I saw, I didn't actually open the email. I just saw the thing that said minutes.
Well,
I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Okay. So we'll do that. Put some chairs in. Michael, do you have trustees' report?
Trustees will be meeting in the third week in January. Full slate of meetings, board meetings, and committee meetings. They're in New York, and I won't be able to report after those meetings. And the second thing is that it is fairly likely that the student trustees' seats are going to be divided between graduate and undergraduate. That
good.
Is no additional seats for the students.
Yeah.
And again, to remind people that I worked very hard to get additional seats for staff, and it ain't going to happen.
I know. We have to work a new angle. I have one. All right.
We got you, Michael.
We can divide you, quarter you up. So let's go to committee reports. So why don't we start with this?
Real simple. The Cars and Justice Committee had two positions open. That's a UA Community Assembly Committee. It's a critical committee, and we need to fill those. And we had a few applications. One we had to toss out because of a conflict of interest. Fortunately, we had two more people. One was Gary Stewart, and our committee looked at it and thought it was pretty good, and Tori stepped up as well. Really quick, if you don't know Gary Stewart, I'm just going to read the two paragraphs really fast. I'm one of the university primary town gown liaisons and Cornell and serve as co-chair of the College Town Neighborhood Council, co-chair of the University Neighborhood Council, and chair of the Campus Community Coalition. And my job, I deal with several departments and a variety of people around campus, While serving on several local nonprofit boards of Tompkins County, I have regular dealings with the JA office, as well as Cornell and Ithaca Police. Prior to taking this job, I was on the opinion page editor of the Ithaca Journal for a decade. And I'm good ideas, and I'm good with ideas, team structures, and writing and follow-up.
You just need a lazy
guy,
so you may not get much.
Yeah, right. And then Tori has also stepped up to be a candidate for this position. If you want to take 30 seconds just to say hi, and then we can...
Well, I work in the registrar's office, so I deal very closely with the whole conduct issue and students and relating towards the educational aspect of it. And we have had a few run-ins with the JA, and so when this came across, I was like, oh, well, this is something pretty interesting. And I don't know much about what's going on with the staff or what's changed. I have read through the new code of conduct, and I know that there are some issues that I'm not quite comfortable with. One of the issues that I read through was that if there's something going on with a staff member or an employee, they report to the supervisor or to your HR rep. And, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have a good relationship with both, but I know there are some instances where staff don't have good relationships, and this might become a potential mm-hmm. problem. Mm-hmm. So that kind of was raised, as well as a couple of other issues where now it seems like out of work, if you're out of work, some of those, if you run into a student kind of dealing with issues with students might come back to haunt you outside of work, which I kind of sometimes I think are okay, but sometimes not okay, and I don't think that should be a factor. So I'm just really interested in kind of building on my own professional experience and learning more about the staff and how I can help out and how I can disperse the information to other individuals around Cal, because I do interact a lot with lots of our peers in Cal. So, and I've also worked on the George P. Award, so I know he's an outstanding guy too, and he would be a really good guy to do it.
Gary Stewart was awarded the George P. Award yesterday.
So if there's no further discussion, I'd like to.
Gary Stewart, I'm on a committee with him actually. Mm-hmm. It's the Cornell Martin Luther King Community mm-hmm. Commemoration Committee. Gary's a member mm-hmm. of that, so for the past few years, I've interacted with him. He's top shelf.
Well, if there's no more discussion, then I'd like to, move to have Tori and Gary be our representatives on the UA Committee of Housing Justice.
Second.
Okay.
All
those
in favor?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
So I'll get back to you
in a minute. Okay. The other thing we had under committee reports was the supervisor forum.
I think that, I'm not very clear about what kind of stands right now. There's just so many changes have been made, so many people have weighed in, so I'm not really sure. Like, I know Mary has a different idea than we do about what's going to happen, and I got a summary from Hazel about your guys' meeting. Mm-hmm. That had a whole bunch of new ideas, so, for my purposes.
We'll be having a CONCOM meeting to go over that. It will be changes. My understanding is that we'll be doing it by invitation to the people in leadership, and we're going to do more meetings. It'll take a little bit longer, as opposed to having it as an open forum. And this way, we're not going to zap our budget like we did with the chili test. We're not going to get like bam. It'll take longer than a year to fulfill it. We'll get this is what Mary wants, and seems how she's going to have to like give us a lot of money. That's one of the changes, and I know at this point we're going to be having more CONCOM meetings to get it all worked out, because there was quite a bit of discussion and changes made from Mary's perspective on how that she wants it handled, and seeing how she's going to be putting most of the bill, those changes need to be taken into consideration. So at this point, we're kind of at a standstill.
So it's not the EA thing anymore, basically.
Well, it is the EA thing. It is the EA thing. But some of the suggestions that she made apparently made sense, so it's got to go back to the committee.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was looking at her wrap-up that she emailed to all of us, and she mentioned frontline feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you guys know what that is?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was
years
ago.
It was years ago.
They used this model. Yeah, the process. You invitation. Area by area bottles to gain, and it was based on office professionals.
And
they were the most numerous group of employees. There were about 1,700 of them, I think. So it was a way that Mary gathered information about what the challenges and issues for administrative personnel were.
And we would be going by college. It's not like we made you a bazillion these. We would break it down by college. Geneva would still be first. But this way, it wouldn't be us against them kind of thing. We're going to eliminate that. Invitation. There's no clear-cut way to invite supervisors, so to speak. You can't run a list of supervisors. So that's something else we have to work out. So there's just a lot of things we have to work out before we can really...
Are we dealing with the workload issue? Are we dealing with the chili chat?
Yes.
Not able to take vacation?
Yes. I guess I'm not even
clear.
We're still following up on the chili chat.
Okay, but
still the same thing.
But do we have a specific topic that we're going to be discussing?
It's going to be the same three questions that we talked about at the last business meeting. Do you have the question
answer?
Yes. Yeah, it's still the same three questions. It's just a matter of... making sure that we have the target area that we want and not how do I put it? How do I explain it? You talk to them.
What?
Hey, Bill.
Well, I heard it, but you heard.
Yeah.
somebody tell us.
You know what would be good, I think, because we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
If we could maybe put it into like an executive summary, I guess, and get it back to the rest of the board.
We need to just basically have another conference meeting because we want to make sure that we're targeting the correct people. The objective is still the same. The questions are still the same. The topic is still the same. We just want to make sure we're targeting the correct people. And we want to have David more involved.
And I think it was more how to invite them and where.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I want to echo something that I heard Peter say, and that is that, you know, the chili chat was very EA, and now it sounds like it's taking this shift, and I think that's something we ought to pay attention to.
I also sounds like there was a lot of momentum with this, because it's a long, slow, drawn-out process. It doesn't have the bang that chili chat had.
And
it almost seems like we've become like an info-gathering service for OHR rather than like look what EA is doing out there. And it was part of it about our reputation having an effect on campus and our contribution as opposed to just offering.
Which we had discussed at the last CONCOM meeting. Remember? And we said, no, we don't want that. We don't want this to become anything other than EA. We want this to remain an EA thing.
Well, but it's not anymore.
Well, I don't know that because we weren't able to have our CONCOM meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Can ComCom get together and present something to us?
Yeah.
Right
that's
now,
the plan.
I'm
not sure why we're having
to debate it.
A meeting. So.
Yeah, I just
we know more about it now.
Right. So apparently, there's some more discussion to be had on supervisor forum.
Yes.
And Hazel isn't here, and she's chair of ComCom.
Right.
So I would rather, if everybody is comfortable, wait until she can come back.
Yes.
And ComCom can meet, and we have a little bit more
stuff
to.
Mm-hmm.
So at least we know there's some stuff that needs to get ironed out. So the other thing on the agenda was Ezra's birthday that
mm-hmm.
Michael brought up, and we had talked about doing something on that date of January 11th. Hazel mentioned to me the last time that she was trying to get Cornell Dining to donate a giant cake. And again, she's not here and hasn't followed up, so I don't know about that.
I know the library is doing an event. They were doing an event for the library, but they may open it up. I think there's going to be the local media that's going to be coming.
Mm-hmm.
So it would really be great if there was some EA visibility at that day.
Uh-huh.
At that
yeah.
Event.
You know what
they're having something in the cafe. I think they're having a cake and they're having some a mini display of some Ezra Cornell artifact, letters, things like that. The big thing is going to be on March 8th. The university's picked that date because it's going to be student staff and that will be tonight. But the actual birthday is January 11th. I think the vet school is doing something in Syracuse. It's Ezra Cornell's birthday, and also the Agricultural Society of New York State, I think, is also their birthday on the same day. So they're doing something, I think, in Syracuse. Yeah, absolutely. So the vet school, I think, maybe doing something in Florida. There's a few other things going on. There's a web page that you can check out. I'm not sure what's going on, but I think Darby wants to hear from the EA.
Yeah. Well, at the last meeting, we formed an ad hoc committee. Hazel was going to convene one, but didn't.
Okay.
So that either needs to get up on an email or something. And there have been a few ideas tossed around, but
all right.
Or maybe just it might be easier just to hook on somebody else. That's not a good word, but to become part of somebody else's event, like the library or something like that.
Well, Michael, can you find out or at least send us the details of what the library is doing, and then maybe we
can... Well, I think there's just a web page, as a celebration web page that you can check out. I think the library is still fleshing it out themselves.
Okay.
January 11th is soon.
Yeah.
Like 3 weeks now? 4 weeks?
I
do think we should do something. But once again, with
the big thing, having birthday on the quad.
Yeah, right.
And all of the local media will be here that day. That's, I think, a really good opportunity
for the EA.
Should I call Ezra? See what he's doing? And maybe we can invite him for lunch or something? I don't know. Do what? Not bad, Ezra.
Oh, the other one.
I don't know. He's within walking distance.
I would do a tutor rather than later.
Yeah.
Because I think some of the other
things are trying to get him to.
He can go from place to place to place.
Ezra Cornell.
All right. Okay. Unless there's anything else, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Oh, yeah, sure. I just wanted to mention I had sent around this year's budget and the proposal for next year's budget, and I'm hoping that we can have this as an agenda item for our next meeting.
Yes.
Okay. And if anybody has any questions between now and then, please let me know.
Yeah, Michael.
I just want to say happy holidays to everyone. Yeah. Have a safe and happy new year. And look forward to seeing all of you in January and some of you before.
All right. Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.